Hi everyone, welcome back. I hope everyone enjoyed the beautiful weather today and was able to get out a little bit. Great to be back learning together this week. To start off today, I want to share a memory that I remember from when I was little. Now, as background, I am not the most like tiny detail-oriented person. Like if I'm looking for something for my house, okay, if I have one set of black 8x11 frames, then I can just buy any other set of black 8.5x11 frames and like they'll be perfect. I'm looking at my wall and they definitely don't match because apparently not all black frames are created equal. But that's kind of how I approach these things. However, when I was younger, I remember that my parents decided we were going to do construction on our home. And little did I know that this was going to be quite the production, that there are so many stages to doing construction. The first is you actually have to mentally decide that you are going to do construction. And then you start by choosing an architect. And the architect sits down and discusses with you everything that you want the house to be and what you want it to look like and any ideas you have. Then the plans start and you begin to sketch the plans, and then slowly they become more and more detailed until finally you have a complete set of plans. And then you have to figure out how to bring these plans into fruition, meaning you have to choose a contractor. Now, I didn't know that this is also not the easiest part of the process. That a contractor is not just a contractor is a contractor, much like a black frame is not a black frame. You have to really research into contractors. You have to interview them. You have to talk to them. You have to find someone who is not only a skilled contractor, but they have a good crew. They are honest. They are efficient. They will make sure that your project gets done in the way that you want it to get done and in the timely fashion in which you want it to be finished. Now, I know nobody's construction ever is finished within the actual time frame, but within the expanded time frame that they tell you. So there are so many components that go into choosing a contractor. And in the beginning of this week's Parsha, Bnei Yisrael are at that point in the Mishkan building process. Then in Parsha Terumah Tetzaveh, Hashem already gave over to them each of the instructions, the detailed architectural plans as to how they will build the Mishkan. And in those times, it wasn't just you go to Home Depot and pick up the supplies you need. Rather, they had gathered all of the materials they needed. And now we arrive, obviously we know after our brief intermission last week for Chet HaEgel, we arrive in this week's double Parsha, Vayakel Pekudei, at the actual building of the Mishkan and the construction of the Kelim and the Big Day Kahuna. Everything that we discussed the plans for in Parshiot Terumah and Tetzaveh must come to fruition in these Parshiot of Vayakel and Pekudei. And it is at the beginning of this week's Parsha that Hashem takes part of this process out of our hands and he introduces us to the one who will be the head contractor on this project. Who is that? If you look, the source sheet is in the chat. In Shemot Perek Lamed Aleph, the very beginning of this week's parasha, Hashem introduces us to the one who will lead this project. Meidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor. Re'e karati b'shim b'tzalal ben Uri ben Chor l'matei Yehuda. Behold, I am calling by name B'tzalel ben Uri ben Chor from the Shevet of Yehuda. Ve'amaleoto ruach Elohim, and I will fill him up with some sort of ruach hakodesh. B'chachma u'betfuna u'beda'at, he will be filled with wisdom and knowledge and understanding. U'bechol melacha, and he will have skills in all areas. Lachshov machashavot, that he will be able to intentionally create, la'asot b'zahav u'b'chesef u'b'nechoshet, out of gold and silver and copper, he is skilled in working with each and every one of them. U'b'charoshet evan limalot, he will be also skilled in cutting the gems that will go into the choshen. U'b'charoshet eat, and in wood cutting, la'asot b'chol melacha, he will be able to do all of the work. The ani hinei natati ito, et Ahaliyah ben Achisamach l'matidan, ubelive kol chacham liv, natati chachma v'asu et kol asher tivisicha. Hashem says, and along with Bezalel, I will also put before you Ahaliyah, and he will also be a chacham liv, he will have some sort of wisdom in his heart, and he too will be able to carry out everything with which I have commanded you. So this is our introduction. Hashem takes out this entire process of having to find the perfect person to build a Mishkan, and he appoints two people for that job. However, these psukim leave us with a number of questions. The first question that I believe is at least standing out in my mind is, why did we even need these people? Hashem had informed Moshe exactly how to build every single item in the Mishkan. Couldn't Moshe be the one to construct it as well? Moshe seems pretty multi-talented. Up until this point, he has been able to fill in as one who brings plagues and one who saves nations and one who splits seas. Moshe seems like constructing an Aron is not quite above whatever he is able to do. That if Hashem had wanted, Moshe would have been the one who could have worked on this project alone. So that's the first question. Why did we even need somebody besides for Moshe? The second question, and the next few, are more technical in nature. Why does Hashem say, Re'e karati b'shem Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur? He's not naming Bezalel at this point. Why doesn't it just say, Hine karati Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur? Here I am calling upon Bezalel. Why does he need to say, I'm calling him b'shem, I'm calling him by name? The third question, we just skimmed right over, but why does it list an extensive lineage of Bezalel? That it says, Bezalel, Ben Uri, Ben Hor, Lemate Yehuda. Do we really need to know this entire family tree of Bezalel? And we may think, oh, they want to give us a little background to who these people are. However, it doesn't give us the same detail when it comes to Ahaliyah at the end of this group of psukim. So therefore, it does call our attention. Why is there such an extensive lineage given for Bezalel? Why do we need to know all the way back to his grandfather, back to his Shevet? Why is all that information important? And lastly, when it says in the pasuk ve'amaleoto ruach elokim that I will fill him with ruach elokim, is that implying that at this point when Bezalel was chosen, he did not yet have the requisite skills needed to carry out this job? It seems to be that Hashem is saying that he will fill Bezalel with what is needed to complete the job. So what are we meant to understand? Who and what was Bezalel like before he was chosen? And what did Hashem add to him? What did Hashem fill him up with, so to say? So there are a bunch of questions here. And to understand who Bezalel was, who Ahaliyah was, why we needed one or both of them, first we have to try to understand who they are. And there's a lot more information that we are given about Bezalel. So first we are going to delve a little bit into who was Bezalel. Why couldn't Moshe have done this job alone? Why did he need this guy, Bezalel, who was given as the head of the project? Because even though we will delve into Ahaliyah as well, and our primary question is going to be what was the relationship between Bezalel and Ahaliyah, the main focus is on Bezalel because it seems, even based on the way it's structured in the Pesukim, that Bezalel is really the one in charge here. And then at the end, Hashem says, and I'll also give you this guy, Ahaliyah. So the main focus is going to be on Bezalel. The Chizkuni first gives us a little bit of insight. And the first number of Mefarshim are going to focus on the question that we have of why give us the extensive lineage of Bezalel. Why do we need to know who he was all the way back to his grandfather? What does that have to do with anything? And the Chizkuni says, Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur, Niskar zikno shel Bezalel, ma she'ein kein ba'ahaliyah ben Achisamach. It lists the ancestors of Bezalel, dissimilar, unlike what it says by Ahaliyah, Lefi shenaharag b'maaseh ha'igal, because Hor, who is listed as Bezalel's grandfather, was killed during Maaseh ha'igal. Ubil melechet hamishkan ba'al chaper al oto avon lekach nizkar Hor aleha. Why does it mention Hor here by Bezalel? Because Hor was killed during Chet ha'igal, and this action of building the Mishkan is here to be mechaper, to bring upon us forgiveness for what happened at the Chet HaEgel. So this statement of the Chizkuni is a little bit jam-packed. It's kind of like mentioning in passing, like, oh yeah, his grandfather died during that crazy episode. And we're like, wait, what happened to Hor? Who is Hor? What happened to him? What does that mean he was killed during the Egel? And we then understand that the Mishkan comes to be Mechaper for the Egel, but we still don't understand who is Hor and what is his role in all of this. So if we look back at the Psukim, right after Bnei Israel had left for Mitzrayim and they are in their war against Amalek, something very interesting happens. It says in Shmuel Perek Tet Zayin, V'yaz Yehoshua kasher amar lo Moshe lihilachim ba'amalek, u'Moshe Aaron v'chor alu rosh ha-giv'ah. It says that Yehoshua was there fighting against Amalek, and Moshe, Aaron, and Hor went up to the mountain. V'haya kasher yarim Moshe yado v'gavar Yisrael v'kasher yaniach yado v'gavar Amalek. Something interesting happened. During this war, when Moshe was up on this mountain with Aaron and this man, Hor, we still have not been explained who Hor was. Moshe lifts up his arms, and Aaron and Hor are there to support him. When his arms are raised, Bnei Israel succeed in battle. And when his arms get heavy and they fall, that's when Bnei Israel suffer a defeat in the war. So it goes back and forth. Bnei Israel are winning, Bnei Israel are losing, and it is all seems to be dependent on where Moshe's arms are being held. Moshe's arms became very heavy, and they put a rock and they placed it underneath him. And he sat on top of it. The Aaron v'Chor tamchu biyadav, and Aaron and Chor supported his arms. Mizeachad u'mizeachad, one on one side and one on the other side. Vehi yadav amuna ad bo hashemesh. Moshe's arms, yadav amuna, they stood strong ad bo hashemesh until the sun came. Rashi comments here and says, who is Chor? Bina shel Miriam haya u'Kaliv ba'ala. Chor was the son of Miriam and Kaliv. That Miriam was married to Kaliv and they had the son named Chor. And the first we hear about him is that during this war with Amalek, he was one of the people up there holding up Moshe's arms. And this symbolism makes a lot of sense. That during the war, who was going to be there to give the schut to Bnei Israel that they should be successful in the war? It was going to be the pillars who were supporting Bnei Israel at all times during this time. That was Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. However, Miriam was not going to go up to the top of the mountain and be holding up Moshe's arms. Therefore, her son Hor went to represent Miriam. Now, these three pillars of Am Yisrael were the ones literally sustaining Am Yisrael within this war through holding up Moshe's arms. So Hor stood in the place of Miriam. When do we next hear about Hor? In Shmuel Perek Chaf Dalet, Vayaka Moshe v'Yehoshua Misharto v'Ya'al Moshe el Har Ha'elokim. After Matan Torah, in last week's Parsha, Moshe goes up to Har Ha'elokim. V'El Hazkinim Amru Shuvu Na Bazeh Arasher Nashav Aleichem V'Hinei Aaron V'Chor Imachem Mi Ba'al Dvarim Yigash Aleichem. Moshe, when he goes up to Har Sinai for the 40 days and 40 nights following Matan Torah, he says to the Zekinim, go back to the camp, and if you have any problems, Aaron and Hor are in charge. Anything that goes wrong, direct your problems to Aaron and Hor. They're the ones watching you. They will take care of everything. The Midrash Tanhuma comments, this is the last we hear of Hor. Why is that? B'shah shebikshu Yisrael la'asutu tomasa. When Bnei Israel had already turned into this angry mob that wanted to build the Egel, Amru l'Aaron, they came to Aaron and they said, Kum asi lanu Elokim, get up and make for us a god. Amad Chor ben Kaliv v'ga'ar bahem. Chor ben Kaliv stood up and he really ripped into them. He said, how could you do this? Moshe's gone for not even 40 days and all of a sudden you're ready to create a new god? Miyad amdu ala v'harguhu. Immediately, the nation stood up and they killed Hor. Ra'a Aaron v'nitirei me'atzmo. And then Aaron saw what had happened and he became afraid for himself and he really feared for his life. And that can explain partially Aaron's role in building the Egel, that Aaron was truly afraid for his life based on what he had just seen them do to his nephew. So who was Hor? Hor was this person who was the son of Miriam and Kaliv. He clearly embodies the character traits that we see later on for Kaliv. Kaliv was one of the two Meraglim that came back and did reported positively about Eretz Yisrael. Him and Yehoshua together tried to turn the nation away from the Meraglim and refocus them on a land filled with milk and honey that Hashem had promised them. And Kalev is that person that is able to stand up to the nation. Chor clearly embodies these character traits of both his mother and his father. He is there supporting Am Yisrael during the war with Amalek, much like Miriam is always one to support Am Yisrael. From the moment that Moshe's life began and Miriam watched him at sea, she is there to protect Am Yisrael. She is there to make sure she is there as a support and as a schus for Am Yisrael. He embodies these traits of Miriam. He embodies the traits of Kalev, his father, as well, that he was willing to stand up against the nation and he is willing to fight for what's right. However, he is killed because of that. However, Hashem promises Chor that his grandson will be involved in the kapara for what happened at Chet HaEgel. That at Chet HaEgel, B'nai Yisrael came, as we discussed last week, they came and they wanted to create their own way of connecting to Hashem. That they felt that their tangible connection to Hashem, which was Moshe Rabbeinu, had disappeared and they didn't know what to do with themselves. So they decided they were going to create this Egel in order to tangibly connect to Hashem. However, their plans clearly went wrong. But as we discussed last week, Hashem then gave them the opportunity of the Mishkan, which was going to be this physical, tangible place in which they could connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem says, Chor, you tried to stand up to the nation, and you tried to make sure this didn't happen, but they did it either way. They killed you. However, your grandson is going to be involved in the Takana. He is going to be there in the building of the Mishkan. He is going to be responsible for correcting the ways of Am Yisrael and turning them back towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu and serving him in the proper way. And that is through the Mishkan. So that is Chor. And the first number of Mefarshim tell us that that is the reason that the extended lineage of Bezalel is written. That because of what happened with Chor, his grandson Bezalel was then chosen as the one who should be the artisan of the Mishkan. However, there is a Midrash in Shemot Rabbah that points us in an opposite direction. Then in Shemot Rabbah it says, Uma asar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hevi lo sifro shel Adam HaRishon. V'her'alu kol adorot shehina tidin la'amun mibereshit ad tchias ha'mesim. Dor vador umlachav, dor vador umanigav, dor vador unuviyav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a sefer that has been written since the time of Adam HaRishon, since the beginning of creation. And in it, it says, all of the generations, way back from the beginning of the world, all the way until Tchias HaMesim, Emirat Hashem, it should be so soon. But this is a large book with a lot of information inside. And what is within this information? Dor Vador Mulachav, the kings of every generation. Dor Vador Mahigav, the leaders of every generation. Dor Vador Nuviyav, and the prophets of every generation. Amarlo, kol achad ve'achad, hitkinatav me'oto sha'ah. V'chein Bezalel me'oto sha'ah hitkinitav. Hevi re'e karati b'shem Bezalel. Hashem says, every job, every person who is going to be designated in every generation is written down in this book, and included in this book as well, is that Bezalel will be the one to build the Mishkan. That from way back in the beginning of time, way back from creation, Bezalel was designated as the one who was going to build the Mishkan. However, this seems to be contrary to what we just developed. That until this point, we developed that Bezalel had been chosen, that possibly the reason why Moshe could not have done this alone is because Chor was Zocha, that his offspring should participate in building the Mishkan. That part of the creation of the Mishkan was to be Mechaper for the Egel, and part of this was having Bezalel involved. However, this Midrash in Shmuel Rabbah seems to be pointing us in a different direction. It seems to be pointing us towards the fact that Bezalel was designated for this job way before the episode with Chor existed. Yes, one can say Hashem knew what would happen to Chor and therefore preemptively could have put Bezalel in that situation because of what he knew would happen at the Egel. But that's not what it seems to say in Shmuel Rabbah. It seems to say that with the words that it ends off with, Re'e Karati V'Shem Bezalel, that there is something unique about Bezalel that designated him from the very beginning of time as the one who was going to build the Mishkan. And what is that? First, I would like to look at the Sforno, and the Sforno says, Re'e Karati B'Shem. Ra'a v'havin ki lo el chinam karativ. Hashem says, look at him and understand that it is not for nothing that I chose him. Hidavar ikri hu b'melachat hakodesh. He was an essential part of the melachat hakodesh, this holy work of building the Mishkan. Shetihiyen esit al yedei bachir Hashem hamekavin b'peuluto v'yusag tachlit hamitzvah. He says, who needs to be the one to build the Mishkan? It needs to be someone who is chosen by Hashem, hamekavin b'peulato, who is focused in his efforts, sheyusag tachlit hamitzvah, who truly internalizes the essence of what is going on at the building of the Mishkan. How do we see that Bezalel truly internalizes this? There are so many midrashim that bring down small snippets of episodes with Bezalel, specifically between Bezalel and Moshe. And one that is fascinating is that the midrash says that, I'm sorry, it's not written down on your sheets, but there were so many midrashim, I couldn't include them all. One of the midrashim brings that Moshe came to Bezalel after Hashem introduces him, and he says, Bezalel, we are going to build the Mishkan, and then we are going to build the Kelim and the Aron. And Bezalel very respectfully says to Moshe, Moshe, is it possible that Hashem said to you that we should create the Aron and then we should create the Mishkan? And Moshe goes back and checks. And then he returns to Bezalel and he says, you're right. And that's why by each and every one of the Kelim, it designates Bezalel's name. However, it emphasizes Bezalel strongly in relation to the Aron. Because Bezalel understood something very important. Bezalel recognized, as the Sforno is saying, that he was focused in his efforts. He recognized that he was not just building any palace. He was not just building any old building. Rather, what did Bezalel recognize that he was here to do? He was here to build a Makom Kodesh. He was here to build a place for the Shechina to rest. And he recognized that while in a house, what is essential is at first to guard you from the elements. That a house, first and foremost, is meant to be a shelter. That's why you begin with what the purpose is. You begin with the end in mind. That if a house is first and foremost meant to be a shelter, you begin by building the structure and the walls. So that regardless of what gets placed inside, the essence of the house is there. Bezalel recognized that it was different with the Mishkan. That the Mishkan was not about being a physical space. Rather, the essence of the Mishkan was the Aron Kodesh. It was a place that would be centered around Torah, and it was a place that would be a makom for the Shechina, a place within which the Shechina can dwell and can interact with Am Yisrael. Therefore, Bezalel recognized that you can't start with the Mishkan by building the walls. That's not what is so essential here. What is essential is the building of the Aron. And therefore, he was correct, even in discussing with Moshe. And therefore, even through seeing that midrash, or understanding the Sforno, we start to understand that Bezalel had specific qualities that made him ideal for this job. That he was very insightful. He was able to be laser focused on what his goal was. He recognized and was so close in his connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he recognized exactly what the purpose of building the Mishkan was. The Or HaChaim continues and gives us even more insight into who Bezalel was. The Or HaChaim says, Re'e karati b'shem, ulai, she'ikavim lomar, she'ir'u remez ha'inyan b'shmo v'shem avotav. When it says, Re'e karati b'shem, we are meant to focus in on the name of Bezalel and the name of his ancestors. Bezalel, why specifically Bezalel? She'asa tzel lekel, that Bezalel created shade for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he created a place within which Hashem could dwell. Ben Uri, Shasa Makum Lasher Or Lo, he created a place, Uri, that was filled with light, Or Lo, it was filled with light. Ben Chor, Shasa Yisrael B'nei Chorin, that he made B'nei Yisrael free, how so? Me'avon Ha'egel, from the sin of Chet Ha'egel. Kamram Chazal b'pasuk Mishkan ha'idot idot lekol shenimchal lahem avon ha'igel hareish nirsham bo hadavar b'shmo v'shem avotav. How do we see this? We see that he freed them from their sin of the egel. As it says, we quoted this last week. Why is it called Mishkan ha'idot? It is idot. It is testimony that Hashem has forgiven Am Yisrael. Ubazayavo on the chon amru ve'amalei b'tosvot. Momar, milvad zo urani musif bo mil eh me chachma, the amru ba chachma, the lo amar chachma, the ulai shakivan al pidivrehem, yehi chachma tala chachimin, the ina kashbrahu notin chachma, ela lemisha yish bo chachma. The Orachaim concludes by saying that what do we learn? We asked the final question that we had after about the lineage and about focusing on the name was, why does Hashem say that he will fill Bezalel up? Did Bezalel have the qualities he needed already? What additional qualities did he need? And the Orachaim concludes by saying that Bezalel was already someone who was filled with Chachma, because Hashem doesn't add something into somewhere where it completely is lacking. That if someone is not smart at all, he has absolutely no wisdom, Hashem is not going to add wisdom there. Hashem chose Bezalel because he was already an intelligent person. He was an insightful person. He was wise and he was very knowledgeable. And Hashem therefore added to him Chachma, Bina, Da'at. He added these different facets, these different components of knowledge and understanding that he may have not had those specific facets before. However, he already was someone who was wise and insightful and caring and was able to look into a situation and truly understand it. Hashem just added onto it. So that's why Hashem says, the MLA, I will fill him up. That he is already someone who possesses these qualities, and I am going to add onto it because he is someone who I chose because of his unique qualities to be fitting for this job. However, to be able to successfully accomplish this job, I am going to add on to him even greater quantities of each of these fantastic qualities. So we see that Bezalel was someone who took his best qualities from the generations before him, that he was someone who already was wise and insightful and had a real understanding and a focus on God. And he was someone who deserved to be appointed for this position on his own merits. However, we also see that he was Ben-Hur, that we specifically connect him to his ancestors, not just because of what he took from them, but for what that means for all of Am Yisrael. That he is going to stand as a symbol to Bnei Yisrael, that he is the one who, what they requested of Hur was incorrect. And now his grandson is coming along and he is showing them how to channel these natural inclinations they have towards wanting that physical connection to Hashem. And he is going to show them how to channel it appropriately. He is going to build them the makom in which they can connect to God in this way. So that is what we know about Bezalel up until this point. That there are parts of him that were chosen specifically because of who his family was. And there are pieces of him that were chosen specifically because of who he himself was. But either way, we've begun to see that Bezalel was necessary in this equation. That whether it was because of the takana for Chet Ha'igel or because of who he was necessary for building the Mishkan. That yes, Moshe was most definitely capable of doing it, but there was a reason to include Bezalel in the process. There was a symbolic reason to include him in building the Mishkan. However, this seems, though, to be a dream team, that Moshe, we have Moshe who's communicating directly with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem is giving the instructions directly to Moshe. It's clear, there's no mistakes here. Moshe knows how to follow exactly what Hashem gave him. And now Hashem adds one other person into the situation. He adds in Bezalel. But as we have developed, Bezalel is also a fantastic person. He is definitely worthy of the job. It totally makes sense why he is here. And it seems like they work so well together. That even right away when Moshe commands Bezalel at the very beginning of this journey, according to the Midrash that we discussed, and Bezalel has a question on what Moshe says, they seem to have this very respectful conversation. It seems to really all be working out great. And for anyone who has ever served in any sort of work environment, you know that when something is working, don't mess with it. Like they say, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. If there are coworkers that are working well together, they understand each other, they are on the same wavelength, then everything seems to be working out, don't throw someone else into the mix. Leave it be. Let them continue to work at their optimal level of functioning at which they are already at, and just leave it be. However, at the end of this group of psukim that we looked at, we see that Hashem does add someone else into the equation, and that is Ahaliyah. If we look back at the psukim, va'anihini natati ito, and I will give with him, et Ohaliyav ben Achisamach l'matei Dan, I will give Ohaliyav the son of Achisimach from the Shevet of Dan, u'beliv kol chacham liv, natati chachma, And in the hearts of each of the wise people, I will give chachma, va'asu et kol tzivitiha. And they will do everything with which I commanded you. So what purpose does Ohaliyav serve? Why is he included into this equation? And the Mizrahi, who is a super commentary on Rashi, comments here and tries to explain what is this Bechol Liv Chacham Liv, what is going on here? And the Mizrahi, the language is extremely confusing, but you can look at it inside, but we are going to do it outside. The Mizrahi explains that there were different levels, there was this hierarchy within the construction of the Mishkan. That within the construction of the Mishkan, there was Moshe who was receiving the instructions from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then there was Bezalel. He was the leading architect. Then we're skipping Ohaliyav for a moment and we'll insert him back into the situation. Below, there is an entire group of people who are called the Chachmei Lev, those that are wise at heart. And they are going to be the construction workers. They are going to be the people who are going to carry out all of the manual labor. That not everything had to be this close, detailed work. Some of it was really just manual labor. It was schlepping the wood. It was cutting the wood. It was melting down the metals. And whatever needed to be done on a basic level, the Chachmei Lev would carry that out. Bezalel was there to direct the entire project, and he was there to work on the things like the kelim that were very detailed. Where does Ohaliyav fit into all this? The Mizrahi says that Ohaliyav was Bezalel's direct partner assistant, that he was on a slightly lower level than Bezalel. He was not the head of the project. Rather, he was right there along with him. He did not do the basic labor, but he also was not in charge of everything. He was the one who worked directly alongside Bezalel, assisting him in each of his personal projects. That there were all these other people who were there to do the other things. Ohaliyav wasn't with them. He was separate from them, but he also wasn't Bezalel. So the way I understand it is Bezalel was the president, and Ohaliyav was the vice president, and then everybody else is kind of there working and making sure that everything gets done. But they're not in any sort of leadership position. That is reserved for Bezalel and Ohaliyav. So we see from this Mizrahi on the basic level of how they interacted, of what their roles each were in the construction of the Mishkan, and how those roles interacted with one another. But why did we really need this second in command? It seems like we're trying to figure out what need Ohaliyav could have filled and what gap he could have filled in. But why was he necessary? Why did Hashem make sure to send Ohaliyav along with the amazing Bezalel? It doesn't seem like he's necessary. So the Shmot Rabbah gives us a very fascinating insight. The Midrash tells us, "Lehadamar Rabbi Abba Bar Chiya, shehadal shebishvatim midabiklo." There is a conversation going on in the Midrash about what is the purpose of the Mishkan. And Rabbi Abba Bar Chiya says, the purpose of the Mishkan is that all of the shvatim, even the lowest of the shvatim, should be able to cling to it. They should be able to connect through the Mishkan. Amar Rabbi Chanina ben Pazi. Rabbi Chanina says, Ein lecha gadol mishevet Yehuda. There is no greater shevet than shevet Yehuda. Ve'ein lecha yarod mishevet Dan. There is no lower shevet. There is no one lower than shevet Dan. Shehaya min halachino. That they are from the lowest level. Umak tivbo. How do we know this? Ubnei Dan chushim. It says the son of Dan was chushim. Chushim is his name. But chushim also means lowly. It means weak. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yavo v'yizdaveglo, I am going to pair up these two tribes. Shelo yehe mivazinoto, v'shelo yehe adam rucho gasa alav. Hashem says, why do I want to partner up these two individuals from Shevet Yehuda and from Shevet Dan? So that one will not be embarrassed, and so that one will not become too haughty. Lefisha hagadol v'hakatan shavin lifnei hamakum. Because the greatest and the lowliest are all equal before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Bezalel, Mishal Yehuda, Ve'Ahaliyav, Midan, V'hu Mizdaveglo. Hashem paired up Bezalel and Ahaliyav in order to show us this lesson. That the greatest Shevet and the lowest Shevet are able to pair up together in order to build the Mikdash. Amar Rabbi Chanina HaGadol V'Hakatan Shavim. The greatest and the least are equal. Le'olam al yehei adam miniach b'tzaro ba'mishkan. Shebnei Shvatim Ilunasa, that all the Shvatim should be able to look at the Mishkan and they should say, I had a part in this. Because the lowest and the greatest of all the Shvatim were able to come together to build it. V'chein HaMikdash Shlomo Miyehuda V'chiram. This model was copied as well in the building of the Beit HaMikdash, that we see that Shlomo, who is from Shevet Yehuda, worked together with Chiram. Chiram, who we discussed in a previous year in his connection to Yehuda. Chiram was not Jewish. His father, or I guess he was, because his mother was Jewish, but he is not considered to be part of Am Yisrael. He's a king of another nation. But Chiram, his mother, is from Shevet Dan. So we see again that when it comes to building the Mikdash, and Chiram is the one who provides the supplies to Shlomo, there is again this partnership between Yehuda and Dan. But wait, why is Dan considered the lowest of the Shvatim? What did Dan possibly do? We always think of Dan as just one of those Shvatim that nobody really talks so much about. There's the few that we focus on, and the rest are just kind of there. What did Dan do to get such a bad rap? And Professor Nechama Price, in her book Tribal Blueprints, I highly suggest it. It is a composition based on a course that she gives in Stern College for Women about each of the personalities of each of the Shvatim. She develops their personality from birth through the actual information we have about them, and then traces characters from that Shevet through the rest of Tanakh. It is fascinating, and the insight that she gives into Dan is very, very interesting. Let's think about who was Dan. Dan was the oldest son of Bilhah. Bilhah was the maidservant of Rachel Imenu. That at the point that Rachel noticed that she was not yet able to have children, she gave over Bilhah. Bilhah then became the third wife of Yaakov. Zilpah, Leah's maidservant, had not yet been given over to Yaakov, because Leah at this point was still having children. And at this point, this was right around the birth of Yehuda. Yehuda and Dan were born at right around the same time. So this great Shevet and this, what will become a very lowly Shevet, were born right around the same time. So who was Dan? Dan was born to Yaakov and Rachel's servant, which made him, Ke'ilu, the child of Rachel. That Rachel had said to Yaakov, have a child with Bilhah that will be considered to be mine. So immediately when Dan is born, Rachel names him accordingly in a way that indicates that she definitely views Dan as her child. She thanks God for granting her a son. And as we know later on, Yaakov shows favoritism to the children of Rachel. So it is very feasible to understand that Dan was born into a great position in the family, that he was considered to be as if he was a child of Rachel, which won him favor, obviously, in the eyes of Rachel and in the eyes of Yaakov. He was not seen as the other B'nai Hashvachot, the children of the maidservants, were going to be viewed as not the favored children. Nothing is wrong with them. We were not meant to kick them out of the family, but rather, we all knew that Yaakov loved the children of Rachel specifically, and the children of his proper wives, more than the rest of the B'nai HaShvachot. That they are considered on a slightly different level. So Dan was born into this situation. However, then Rachel is able to naturally have a child with Yaakov, and that child is Yosef. And we know that Yosef is favored above all of the other children. So immediately Dan is demoted. Dan is no longer this prized, beloved child who is the only connection in a child between Rachel and Yaakov. Rather, he is demoted. He's kicked out. He is no longer in this prized position. Yosef now takes his rightful role in the family, and Dan is left very out of place. He is no longer considered like he is a child of Rachel. However, he no longer totally fits into the B'nai HaShvachot because he's tasted what it's like to not be among them, to be in this higher position in the family. And he doesn't feel right in that position. And we see from the beginning that this can very likely develop these feelings of being alone, being isolated, being out of place, not really feeling like you fit in. Yaakov describes, in Berachas Yaakov, he describes Yaakov, Dan, as Yehi Dan Nachash, that Dan is compared to a snake, A snake very much also possesses many of these qualities. That a snake dwells alone. It dwells by people's feet. It crawls through the dust. It is sneaky. And in the Torah, we know ever since Nichet of Adam HaRishon, the snake is an allusion to evil. That snakes are not seen as any sort of positive character. They are seen as lowly. They are seen as sneaky. And they are very much seen as evil. So Dan is compared to a nachash, that in the bracha it says that he attacks people from their heels, that he seems to be this sneaky kind of low-lying character. However, to further confuse us, Dan is chosen as the head of the camp of the B'nai HaShvachot. That when B'nai Yisrael are camping, the camp in which the other B'nai HaShvachot dwell is led by Dan. And we know that in order to be chosen as a leader in the house of Yaakov, you have to have earned it. That we see from Reuven that birth order alone does not put you in a place of leadership. So Dan must have had some positive qualities because he's chosen as a leader. But we also know that the camp of Dan gets put at the end of the traveling order. That they are the ones that kind of follow behind, don't really have their own place. They pick up the stragglers. Everyone who doesn't belong gets kind of brought in to Shevet Dan. The characters that we see come out of Shevet Dan are as well not such fine characters. We see most famously that Shimshon came out of Shevet Dan, and he goes according to the name of the Shevet Dan. He is a judge. However, we know that Shimshon is also this very angry character. He is very much separate from society. He is different. Also, the Mekalel, the man who was found to be blaspheming in the camp and is brought to Moshe, and charged for having cursed God in the camp, the Mekalel is also from Shevet Dan. So we see that Dan really does have a bad rap, that there's definitely something very off about Dan, that Dan doesn't have any place. Dan is there for the stragglers. Dan must have some positive qualities because he's a leader, but we also see these traits of someone who is angry, isolated, and disliked by those around him. That he is just this out-of-place kind of character from the very beginning. So now we understand why the Midrash describes us that Dan is the lowest of Shvatim and Yehuda is the highest of Shvatim. So now, if we look at the Rabbeinu Bechaye that I brought below, he will restate what this beautiful point is. Why combine the Shvatim of Yehuda and Dan in the building of the Mishkan, specifically through Bitzal and Ohaliyav? And Rabbeinu Bechaye says, V'ani hine natati ito et ohaliyav ben achisa mach lemati dan. Amar Rabbi Chanina, ein lecha gadol mishevet Yehuda, ve'ein lecha katan mishevet dan. Shehaya min halachinon, amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu yavo lehistaveg lo, shelo tehe rucho gasa shagadol v'katan shavim lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He reemphasizes, and he says that why did Hashem pair up the lowest of the Shvatim with the highest of the Shvatim? It is for a two-pronged reason. So that the lowliest Shevet, Shevet Dan, shouldn't feel like they are mivazeh, that they are being embarrassed. But additionally, it is also on the other hand, that the Shevet of Yehuda, that is the greatest of the Shvatim, shouldn't become so full of themselves. They shouldn't think that they are so great. The Af Bit HaMikdash, Shnei HaShvatim, Ne'ilu Shlomo Mishevet Yehuda V'chir Mishevet Dan. So we copy this model as well when it comes to building the Mikdash. Mitzadi Moshe Kinka to B'Divrei Yamin Ben Isha Min B'no Dan. And the Eitz Yosef, who is a commentator from the 1800s who comments on the Midrashim, he says, Shelo Hayu Mivazim Oto. Ma Shehaya B'tal V'Haliyav Nizkarim Yachad Shelo Yabuzu Et Shevet Dan Me'achar She'Ahaliyav Nechshavim B'talal. The Eitz Yosef describes, what does this mean? He shouldn't be embarrassed. He says that since Ahaliyav is included right along with Bitzalel, he'll recognize that he's not so lowly after all. Vigam Bitzalel lo yika'eh. And but Bitzalel will not become full of himself. He will not be like, wow, I was chosen for such an important job. Me'achar shegam Ahaliyav nimna'imo. Because he'll recognize that Ahaliyav is written right along with him. So what is the message from this? Why did Hashem have to throw Ohaliyav into the mix? It doesn't seem like he serves a specific purpose here. And what the Midrashim are telling us, rewritten by Rabbeinu Bechaye so beautifully, is that it is meant to teach us an important lesson. That unlike when we talked about in the beginning, when you're choosing a contractor for your home, you are considering his efficiency, his proficiency in what he is trying to do, his honesty. You're not trying to evaluate someone who is simply going to have the skills to build the Mishkan. Rather, every component that went into the building of the Mishkan was meant to be symbolic and was meant to teach us a lesson. And it is no different with the appointment of Bezalel and Ahaliyav. Then Hashem is saying, you know what? I could have plopped down a Mishkan fully formed right in front of you. Hashem at this moment was guarding Am Yisrael with the Ananei. Hashem can do anything. He will miraculously build the Mishkan. He could have easily done it through Moshe. However, Hashem chose to include Bezalel in the process. Why was that? To give over to us all of the symbolism that Bezalel brings with him, whether that is his connection to Chor or whether that is his personal traits that teach us many components that are integral in building the Mishkan. That we are meant to do what is right and how we are meant to connect to Hashem appropriately. And then Hashem says, I'm going to teach you one more lesson. I'm going to add Ahaliyav into the mix, because this is not about getting the Mishkan built in the most efficient manner, about who is necessarily the most skilled. The Midrashim tell us that they were coming out of Egypt. They were brick builders. No one had any skills. Then Hashem says Bezalel was going to be able to do it because Hashem said Bezalel was going to be able to do it. Then nobody was a trained silversmith or knew how to work with gold or wood or stones. Hashem had to show them how to do this. So Hashem says that's not what it's about. And I'm going to add Ahaliyav in as well. Even though in a regular, normal situation, you don't want to add extra cooks to the kitchen. But Hashem says, here, this is going to teach you the most important lesson of all. And that is that although Bezalel is from the greatest Shevet, he is not the only one who can be involved in building the Mikdash. We need Ahaliyav as well. We need someone to represent the lowest part of the nation, because Kulam Shavim Lifnei HaMakom, the greatest and the least are all equal before Hashem. And Hashem says, if you are going to truly create a place for me to rest my Shechina, it's going to be a place in which everyone is equal, in which everyone in Am Yisrael is involved. We need everyone. We need Shevet Yehuda, we need Shevet Dan. You are all part of Am Yisrael, and in order to honestly create a place where Hashem is able to dwell, we need everyone to be in it together. And this is very much the message that we just read in Parshat Shkalim as well, that every person, no matter how wealthy or how poor, brought one half a shekel. That before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everybody is equal. And that's why each person brought the exact same amount, no matter how wealthy they were, no matter how poor they were. They each brought the machatzir, a shekel, one half shekel. And that is what went to building the Mishkan. That Hashem is emphasizing the same point in the appointment of Bezalel and Ahaliyav. That whether you think you are low, or whether you think you are high, or you are what you consider to be the lowest Rasha in Am Yisrael or the biggest Tzaddik, everybody is equal before Hashem, and you are all needed to build the Makom HaMikdash. May we be able to internalize this message and recognize that whether we consider ourselves to be so great or so lowly at this very moment, we're all needed in creating a place where the Shechina can dwell. Thank you so much for joining today. Please.